exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio, episode 4 of 2022, and I can't believe, Jen, that we're already just about all the way through January. I mean,
yeah, January's almost gone already. That's insane.
I mean, that just means that one more month of this offseason has just rocketed by. By the way, it's Grant Zellner and Jen Allen coming to you right now from two different places here in the country. It's freezing cold where I am. I don't know what it's like where you are. I haven't thrown a disc in 2 weeks. It's driving me crazy. But
today was beautiful. It was 70. I could have done a tank top and shorts.
Quit rubbing it in, Jen.
Yesterday was colder, though.
Stop rubbing it in. You know, here's the thing. I'm just going to stop down for a second. When you get a touch of the Rona right after Christmas and coming into the new year, and then you launch a new podcast, or at least you relaunch an old podcast, and then all the first of the year stuff happens with a new disc golf season, all of a sudden you realize you actually have not thrown a disc in 2 weeks, which is about 13 days longer than I normally go between throwing a disc, because I'm usually out there every day, maybe every other day at the least. So I'm
at least you don't have a major event coming.
Well, I'm living vicariously through you. You know, I figure that's the way to go. By the way, special guest in the studio, not going to keep her waiting any longer, because Sarah Hokum has been on the road just to be here with us right now in the PDGA Radio studio. How you doing, Sarah?
What up, Grant? I'm doing great. A little tired, but, you know, I decided when you asked me to be on the radio show, I was like, you know what? I got to drive to Arizona.
When did we talk, Thursday or Friday?
It was like Wednesday.
It was Wednesday. But
Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah.
You were at least, what, 1,200 miles then from where you are sitting right now?
That's about right.
You've been hauling. Why? What have you been doing? Off-season prep work?
Right. So I definitely hit the road as soon as I got the call from you. That was basically the catalyst to get me to Arizona. No. Actually, it worked out really well. I just finished my off-season job where I put up Christmas lights with Mace Man in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So we just finished taking them all down. And then I hit the road as soon as I could to get to the warm weather to get some serious training in.
Yeah. Now talk about for that a second, because Jen and I were talking about this earlier this afternoon about how both of you are a little bit of a throwback in that you both have non-disc golf jobs that you hit at least in the off season, if not in your case, Jen, throughout the course of the calendar year. And that's a little bit of a throwback, because that's the way disc golfers kind of had to make it, you know, not so very long ago. And do you all feel like you're becoming the exception rather than the rule?
Yeah.
In a word. Yeah.
Keeps her busy. It gets to clear the mind a little bit and refresh.
Yeah, it's weird. I've always worked in the off season, and I always like invite my buddies to, like, you know, hey, you want to make some money? I got a buddy. He, you know, it's, I always find work that is perfect for the off season time, and nobody ever takes me up on it. I don't get it.
How long have you been hanging Christmas lights in the off season?
This is my fourth season.
Okay. So you're becoming a legitimate professional in two different areas of the economy. You're a professional at throwing plastic circles, and you're a professional at hanging twinkly lights.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, it's fun. It's a bunch of disc golfers that actually do it. There's only a few of us that don't play. We just drive around all these different residential houses, throw the ladders on the roof, get on the roof ourselves, make the lights look pretty, turn them on, and skedaddle to the next house. We do like 300 houses a year.
Oh, wow. And what part of the country?
Dallas.
So at least it's not just freezing cold when you're doing this work through like November and December.
It can get a little chilly, but we don't work in the rain or anything like that, because it's not good to climb ladders and get on roofs.
Yeah, and you know,
I think your other sponsors may not appreciate that.
Working with electricity in the rain, no problem. It's fine. No big deal. By the way, my lights are still strung up on my house here in Oklahoma. So if you happen to go back through here, you know, maybe on your way from Arizona to Emporia, Kansas or something, make sure you stop by, bring your ladder.
Yeah, I've got a first week of March open.
First week of March. I'm going to be that guy in my neighborhood that still has Christmas lights up. That's fantastic. Well, I already am that guy in my neighborhood that still has Christmas lights up. So you've been working in the off season, Sarah. What have you been getting in between your job? What have you been getting in terms of practicing, in terms of your fitness, in terms of your sort of off season, maybe recharging, those kinds of things? Because we're going to hit it hard here in less than a month as far as the 2022 season goes. So what are you doing?
Yeah, it is upon us. So I get in really good shape doing the Christmas light stuff because I'm carrying ladders around all day and climbing and trying to hold myself under the roof. I always kind of joke about how it's like the best gym ever, because instead of like pumping out that last rep, you're like, I got to hold on or I'll die. So
that'll do it.
So I get in really good shape doing that. But then over Christmas, I went home and visited my family in the cold. So I really didn't get to throw then. And we're working like 14-hour days on the Christmas lights, so there's no time to throw. So I didn't get very much in December. But the takedown season is shorter, and I was able to get some rounds in. I've only gotten in about 20, 25 rounds in the last 2 months. But I've been able to get to the gym a little bit when I had days off, and I'm in pretty good shape just from the Christmas lights in general.
That's good. Now, as far as your practice goes, what elements of your game are you maybe either maybe you always work on these, you know, in the off season, or maybe there's an element of your game that you're like, you're thinking to yourself, hey, I want to sharpen this up. This has been a weak area. I want it to be more of a strength or whatever. What are you working on as far as that goes?
I've made some critical changes to my putt over the off season, because that's one thing I can do, even in the dark. So yeah, I've made a couple minor but critical changes to my putt. And then I've been really making some progress with my backhand out in the field. I'm hoping that I can continue to work through that over the next basically 2.5 weeks before the All-Star event. And then I'll have another week and a half before Vegas, and then another week and a half before Waco, to really put in some quality time on a couple of those shots that, and I think I'll be able to make some progress there.
I have a funny story for you. I was at Music City in late September of this past year, and it was only maybe the fourth or so event that I had gotten to attend as a member of PDGA staff. And as I was walking across one of those courses, trying to catch different groups and do some coverage things and things, I looked up ahead and saw an FPO group on the tee, and I think it was you on the tee, and I was trying to keep tabs of where you were and several other players, and you were on the tee and you were lining up a backhand. And in my brain, I went, okay, well, that's not Sarah's group. She must be in this, right? And then I got a little closer and I was like, Sarah wears sports skirts like that. That could be, no, not really. And sure enough, it was you lining up a backhand. And I thought, I just saw a unicorn go prancing through the woods here in Tennessee.
Let's see, hole 17 on what course is that? Hole 17.
To be honest with you, at the time, I probably didn't even know exactly where I was on the course. I had gotten off the plane and blasted up there. But anyway, that's just my funny Sarah Hokum story. Is one of the first times I saw you on the course in the middle of an event, my first thought was, oh, that's not her, and it was. So.
Well, I throw them so infrequently, I could probably tell you exactly what hole it was. And what
I know. I know. You could probably tell me everything about it. The wind was coming in. And...
Yeah. So I'm working on my forehand. She's working on her backhand. Watch out.
You guys would be a sick doubles team. I'm just saying. It'd be fantastic. All right. So now another thing that you've been doing in this offseason that savvy visitors to PDGA.com are going to be aware of is, Sarah, you had been asked to star, and I'm not putting that in air quotes, by the way, I mean it. You got asked to star in a new series of videos that has just debuted at PDGA.com. I think the second out of a series of about 12 videos dropped last week, so the third one is coming up any day now, and it's PDGA Rules School, and you had a chance to be sort of the talent, which has got to be a trip to be the talent in a professional shoot in delivering all of that information. It took 12 segmented videos to get out all of the information we want to get out there about rules. Some of them longstanding rules, right? And some of them may be rules that have recently changed, but with all the influx of new members to the PDGA and so many playing the game right now, you just did a really important thing. Can you take us behind the scenes?
Yeah, it was It was a lot of fun. I was really flattered to be offered the, you know, the position, and flew out to the IDDC and started working with the Lunchbox crew. Those guys are super talented. And they're really fun and really great spirited. And they would just set us up on me and Brian. They'd set us up on the different, you know, angles and talk about what we were supposed to be doing with our hands and face. And then we rolled through them. We had a challenge to try to see who could ace one of the readings. So we were basically reading on a screen,
right,
and reading the rules. And I didn't know if I could do it. When they asked me to do it, I was like, I've never done it, but let's try. So it was pretty fun, but neither one of us ever got through one of the rules without messing it up and having to restart it or something. But it was fun. We had a good time. We birdied a few holes.
The first footage I saw coming from that day, and if you recall, I was out there for part of that day while you were working, but the first footage I saw was you standing in the sort of that museum room there at IDGC doing sort of a welcome, just a generic welcome, which to me is one of the hardest things to do because you don't get the benefit of holding a prop in your hand like a disc or of getting to point in the background at a basket in the distance or something like that. You just have to stand there and look down the barrel of that camera and talk. And I thought, it looks like Sarah's been doing this for years.
That's great. I, you know, fake it till you make it sometimes. But it was a lot of fun. You know, I just tried to be natural and pretend there's a face on the camera, and, you know, and thankfully you can, you know, when you mess it up, they could cut that out and try it again.
Just between you and me, we won't tell anybody else. How many takes did it take to get that one?
Which one? The opener? I don't know.
Yeah, the opener.
Oh, I don't.
You don't even know. You don't even remember how many takes it took.
I bet it only took like one, because that was easy. It was like one line.
Okay. Well, when what I think is the hardest thing to do is for you the easiest thing to do. That explains why you're the professional disc golfer and I'm not. That's what that explains.
It's not a contest, man. It's all good.
I think disc golf by definition is a contest.
With yourself.
That's a great attitude to have. I'm going to pass that on. It's a contest with yourself. Did any scenarios there as you were making those rules videos, did any scenarios catch you by surprise? Were you in the middle of demonstrating a rule and thinking to yourself, oh, I had actually kind of forgotten this, or, oh, this happened to me last week. What a coincidence. Did anything like that happen that you can remember?
No, I mean, it was more like, I'm just trying to read these words as best I can.
Right.
I was not thinking about things that happened to me while I'm reading the rules. It was just straight up like,
it's a lot.
Say the words. Don't have a funny look on your face. Don't make your hands do something weird. Like, quit moving your head that way. Like, did you just say that word right? Is your lisp coming out right now? Like, enunciate. Like, that's the stuff I was thinking about.
Did you get a chance to watch on video maybe a take that you had just been a part of so that you could go back and do it again and try something different?
I kind of just fed off of what the Lunchbox guys said. They're like, this, you're doing good. Or they would say, can you say that a little bit differently if it's in this particular part, enunciate that part versus this part. So I didn't really get much feedback other than just their feedback. And I trusted them. They were cool. I've seen a lot of their work and I think they do a really good job. So I felt like I was in pretty good hands.
They did do a great job. Well, before we get off the topic, I want to do Sarah Hokum's top three rules to remember. So let's assume for a minute that I'm a novice player. I've been to the course maybe a couple of times. Someone gave me a disc or two and I'm out here playing. If I can just remember, say, three things in my head, as far as the rules go while I'm playing a casual round, what would your three rules to remember be?
Well, I think the number one rule is remember to read the rule book.
Or the sign in many cases. There's often a sign at courses.
Or have the rule book handy. That's always helpful as well.
Like, if you expect to know the rules without reading the rule book, like, I don't know what you're doing. Because, like, read the rule book. Like, read it. Like, read it word for word. Like, it's really small.
It's not that long.
Just read the dang book. That's all I got to say.
I want the the rule book for dummies. I think we need to do a funny.
It's like 12 pages.
I know, but we could do a funny one.
It could be like 2 pages.
Like, and like, take out the
like
lawyer
a graphical
talk.
Interpretation,
yes,
of all
pictures,
the rules.
Mm-hmm. All pictures.
We need pictographs.
Yes.
That's a great idea. How about a pop-up when you open it? Three-dimensional things.
Do they still
Each page is a different section.
Yeah.
That would be cool. And you could have a movable little cardboard disc that you move around the Mando.
You could have an actual Mando pop up in the middle of page number 4.
Mark this down, Grant. This is our new idea.
This is right. This is our new big money maker, just like the ones we've come up every week so far. We're going to have a pop-up PDGA rule book. That actually is a really good point, Sarah. A lot of people, we get requests pretty frequently, people wanting rule books. It's right there on the website. It's got its own tab and everything. And to your point, it's really not that long.
Yeah, the next one I would say is a pet peeve of mine. And it is that when you're trying to give a call, trying to come to a consensus on a card about a call, you don't get to cop out and just say, I don't know, it's too close. You don't get to do that. You have to say, I think it's in or I think it's out in order for the consensus majority rules thing to work. Like, you don't get to just opt out because you don't want to say because you don't want to hurt their feelings or you don't want to, like, it is super close and you don't want to be the one that says it one way or the other. Like, you have to make a call. And then if it is not a consensus, then the benefit goes to the player. But you don't just get to say benefit to the player. That's my call. Yeah, that's not a call. That's the result of a non-consensus on a call. The call is in or out. You don't get to say,
right.
I don't
That's a good point.
That is not an acceptable answer.
That's a really good point. And I think that's an unspoken sort of behind the scenes difference between a lot of pros and high level amateurs and a lot of, you know, beginners and lower level amateurs, is that pros instinctively watch each other's shots. They don't even necessarily look like they're doing it as intently as they are. Whereas I can't tell you how many tournaments that I've been a part of where absolutely nobody is watching some of the shots. And then when something happens, everybody's just kind of shrugging. And I don't think, in most cases, I don't think they intend to do that. It's just, it's a habit that you kind of have to get into.
I was in a terrible position once with another player where I was the only one that saw where the disc crossed out of bounds.
Oh,
and it was not in a good spot, you know, and it was crappy because I had to put her there and I didn't get to use any other information to try to help me. And then she felt like I was like being, you know, like I was bullying her or something. And I'm like, look, like, that's what I saw. Like, am I supposed to say something else? That's a bad lie. But hey, that's what it is. Like, you know, had we had more people watching, then it wouldn't be just me against this one person.
Right.
Like trying to like argue about some stupid spot. It would be a consensus among all the people that saw, you know. And so I got put in a really bad position. I mean, I've been put in that position multiple times because people are not watching the discs as they fly through the air and taking note.
Is this another one of those situations where you had 3 or 4 people on the card and you were the only one paying close enough attention?
In this particular case, yeah. You know, okay, and of course we all make mistakes and I've been the person that didn't see. I mean, I'm not going to act like that doesn't happen, but I mean, to make a concerted effort to be available to give information so that the best outcome and the fairest situation can be determined is a responsibility of everyone.
Okay. So, actually read the rule book, which is a great bit of advice. If you've never skimmed through it at least once, go ahead. Number 2, watch the discs in flight so that you can offer your opinion if any dispute of the rules ever happens, or not even a dispute. I don't want to act like it's always some kind of a weird conflict. It's just a matter of just applying the rules and being a good card mate to others.
And just talk about what you saw. You don't have to, you don't have to make it personal at all. Just say, I saw it go out right here. And then beyond that, the other people will say where they saw it. And then you can figure out where to put the line.
I think another good thing too is when you're all watching from the tee pad, you know, you're like, oh, you know, call it from the tee pad, because when you get up there, you know, like, oh, it was on that second fence post or it was right by that branch. Then when you get up there, you're not using any kind of other feelings to be like, oh man, this is a bad lie. Maybe we saw it right here. You know, try to make that spot kind of from the tee pad with your group to say, okay, did everyone see it was that third flag?
It went right over that dark spot on the ground.
Right.
That's helpful too, is you're already kind of thinking about it before you get up there versus getting up to that situation and having other things kind of come into play.
Right. I see what you're saying there. That keeps anybody from accusing someone of setting them up for failure or something like that. If you made the call long before you could have known that there was, I don't know, gravel there and would make for a little bit of a hard stance, then there you go. Okay, so that's two things. Read the rules, watch the disc in flight. Sarah, what's your third rule to remember?
I would say if you ever got a question on a call, certainly pull out the rule book, but also just call a provisional and move on. When nobody wants a four-card backup because somebody can't like decide some call, like let's just play a provisional. Let's get on with the things.
You can ask Jen. I told Jen that when I ask Sarah what her three rules to remember, I can almost guarantee that last one is going to be play a provisional.
Yeah, that's always the best rules of advice for sure.
So Sarah, talk us through how you play a provisional if you're in a tournament and maybe you're not sure how to go about it.
Sure. So you get to your situation where you don't know whether your disc is like inbounds or out of bounds, or maybe you don't know how to play from a particular lie because of this particular circumstances. Mm-hmm. And your card mates are like, you know, you don't know how to play the hole. So you play it in the two different ways, whether it's inbounds or out of bounds or whatever, which side of the mando or whatever you're in, whatever is in conflict. It can come into play in a lot of different types of situations. But whatever the confusion is, you play it out both ways. Mm-hmm. You play every shot from each lie as you progress down the hole, pull out both times, record the score of both situations, keep track of which one was which lie, like which one was the inbounds versus the out of bounds or whichever way you played mm-hmm. it. And you just go ask the TD, explain what happened, go ask the TD, and he'll make the call at the end.
Right. And an important detail, though, is you need to declare that that's what you're doing.
Correct. You have to say this is a provisional before you do that next shot.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always like, I always try to like, if I'm the one suggesting that someone play a provisional because they're questioning what to do on a thing, I'm like, just play a provisional. And then they go, okay. Then I say, hey, make sure you say I'm playing a provisional because, mm-hmm. you know, they're just agreeing with me that they should play a provisional. But I'm like, you got to say it with those lips, not
yeah.
mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole group needs to hear it. The whole group needs to know.
Yeah. So just be very clear with the group. Make sure more than one person hears that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All great points. All right. So summing up Sarah's top three rules to remember. Number one, give that rule book a skim. Better yet, go ahead and read it word for word at least once. It's not that long. Number two, make sure you're paying attention to your card mates and to what it is that they're doing so that you can offer your opinion on the situation. You can't just cop out and say, oh, I don't know what happened. You need to be able to say if the disc is in or out or what you believe occurred. And number three, when in doubt, play a provisional, encourage your card mates to play a provisional, have the TD offer their ruling up later on, but this way you can keep the game going. Is that a good summary of Sarah Hokum's three rules to remember?
I think you said it better than I did.
Well, we asked and you delivered. Earlier this past week, Jen and I tweeted out that we were looking for your questions on our Twitter feed. That's PDGA_radio. We asked you to use the hashtag AskPDGAradio, which, by the way, you can ask a question of us anytime you like using that hashtag. You can also email us if your question is a little longer than a tweet. We've got an email address. It's podcast@pdga.com. Well, you asked us your questions, and now we're going to do our best to answer them, mainly because we've got two professionals right here willing to help. Jen, you've got the first question. Can you go ahead and let us know what that was and who it was that tweeted it to us?
Yeah, this was from Grizzly Ginger Disc Golf, or DG. He's asking us, if a lie is unable to be determined out of bounds or inbounds by the card consensus, does the throwing player have to throw twice from that same lie with a provisional, or is it just a question whether or not it's an OB stroke that's added when the TD has given them the when they're approached by the TD?
So I think, and we're just going to have to make our best guess at the situation that Grizzly Ginger is describing here. I think if you picture a disc that is right on the edge of being called inbounds or out of bounds, we're talking about one of those blade of grass scenarios. Well, in either case, you're going to take that 1 meter of relief from that spot. It's just a question of whether you have to have taken that meter of relief from a disc that's been out of bounds, or if you're going to take that meter of relief from the out of bounds line, which you're allowed to do even if your disc is in bounds. You're allowed to pull back from the line at least a meter. So what I think Grizzly Ginger is asking is, are you throwing twice from exactly the same spot on the ground?
Right. So he's just saying, you know, the shot's going to be the exact same shot. It's just, I mean, you're going to take that meter in.
I know the answer.
I think she just did a video on this.
I know
Hold
the
on.
Answer. I know the answer,
she just
I swear.
Knocked you out of the way of the microphone because Sarah knows the answer. Okay, Sarah, what do you say?
It's player benefit, because you just have to read the first part of the sentence. If a disc cannot be determine whether it is an inbounds or out of bounds consensus.
That's a great point, Sarah, because I actually did go to the rule book. I followed your first rule to remember and went straight to the rule book to try to give official advice here. And for those that are really interested in what part of the rule book, it's section 801.03, which I realize makes the rule book sound like it's massive. It's got 801 sections with No, it's just, this is the way it's organized. Section 801.03 is a section that's labeled appeals. And the very first sentence says, when a group cannot reach a majority decision regarding a ruling, the ruling is based on the interpretation that is most beneficial to the thrower. So it's exactly what you just said, Sarah. It is whatever is most beneficial to the thrower. As they say in baseball, the tie goes to the runner.
That was a sneaky question, though, because he's all like, well, which do we play the provisional twice? Like, what do we do?
Well, let's go ahead and carry it out just
nope,
a little bit
no
further
provisional, bro.
For Grizzly Ginger's benefit. The second section of that rule says this. It says a player may appeal a group decision to an official or the director by clearly and promptly stating that they want to do that. In other words, let's say the whole group says it's out of bounds and you're the player and you're adamant that it's not. If the official or the director is readily available, as in they're right there next to the hole, did you know that you can discuss things with the director right then and let other groups play through?
Yes.
I did not. I didn't know that you could let other groups play around. I always felt like the order of play in a tournament was pretty rigid. But in this instance, if you need to stand aside and discuss something, you can let the groups behind play through.
But you can't like call an official out to do it. Like there has to be one
Correct.
Close. Like you can't just be like, I'm not going to continue until I get an official out here to give mm-hmm. me a ruling. You cannot put your foot down like that.
Perfect segue into the next section of the rule, which says if that official or director is not available, the thrower may make a set of provisional throws, just like you described earlier, Sarah, where you play it out twice. Once as though the ruling was one way, and once as though the ruling was the other way, and then you can take both of those results to the official whenever it's practical, later on in the round or after the round is over.
So we still didn't cover, though, what if you want to appeal that decision, Mr. Grizzly said. So if you want to appeal that decision and you want to play it out as a provisional because you don't agree with your card mates, does he doesn't play twice, right? He just plays it and then it's determined whether it was inbounds or out of bounds later.
That's a good catch, Sarah, because in this particular situation, your lie is the same in either instance, whether you're playing with the penalty stroke or whether you're playing the provisional. So it makes sense, I guess, to play just one time and then maybe you will or maybe you won't add in the penalty stroke later. I think if I were offering my best advice, given this information right here, I'd say you still play a provisional. You still play two sets. And here's why. Because I think there are situations where if you already have that penalty stroke, you might make decisions differently throughout the course of the hole than if you didn't. Does that make sense?
So he has to play both lies, even though they're the same.
That's how I would interpret it, because I'm just thinking of situations where if I'm on the course and I'm lying, say, two or I'm lying three, that might affect the decision of how much risk I want to take on that next shot or, you know, whatever, whether I want to go for a particular long putt or whether I just want to lay it up and take, do you see what I'm saying? So
I do see what you're saying. You're like, oh, this one is the one that went out of bounds, so I better try to run this 70 footer.
Right.
That's going to work out.
And then both scores are the same, and we've wasted 30 minutes, mm-hmm. and you write down your four, and you walk away.
Yeah. With your tail between your
that's
legs.
That's right. That could happen, Jen. So anyway, that's why I think you do go ahead and play both situations with a full-on set of provisionals, because you've created two different situations. In one, you're lying, say, two, and in the other, you're lying three, and that's going to affect you.
And while physically the situations seem exactly the same, mentally they're not.
Exactly.
So that's a good distinction. And yeah, I agree with you there. And that's exactly what the rules say anyway. So play them both.
I agree with you. And by the way, the rules say you're right. So and then the final detail for Grizzly Ginger's benefit is that if a ruling is overturned, the director or the official has the authority to adjust the player's score to reflect the correct interpretation of the rules. So hopefully Grizzly Ginger, given all of that information, an agreeable outcome is possible. Thank you so very much for the question. And like I said, we want to encourage others to ask us questions using that Ask PDGA Radio hashtag. One more question that we received came from Patrick Reddick. He emailed his question over because it was a little bit more complicated. It had to do with individuals who have been pros in their local areas and now maybe due to the growth of the sport, maybe due to a limited number of spots in local tournaments because so many people are trying to get in. He's asking about what do you do if you once declared that you're a pro and now you're thinking you kind of wish you didn't.
Yeah, this is a tough one, you know, like as you age, yay, and as the growth of the sport just continues to flourish, you know, the talent level just gets rising, you know, and so I can see there's a lot of people displaced in their divisions. But first, you know, from Todd Line at the event support and training manager guy, he says that a pro is someone who's accepted cash as a prize. It doesn't matter what your rating is. So that's an important point. Doesn't matter what your rating is. And it doesn't matter what division you were playing. If you've accepted any money as a prize, you automatically get reclassified as a pro.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other hand, an AM is someone who has not accepted cash as a prize and is not registered as a pro. And it doesn't matter what your rating is and what division you play. You can be rated 990 and spend most of your time playing MPO, but still remain as an amateur as long as you want, as long as you don't accept any money.
Right.
So, I mean, this guy has accepted money. So he's like, I'm classified as a pro, but now I want to play maybe some AM tournaments. Mm-hmm. But the PDGA, and so the PDGA actually does allow for that.
Matter of fact, I've got the writing right here. Pros can play in amateur divisions if your rating is low enough. So if you're, say, under a 970 rating, you can play in the most advanced amateur division. And you can do so in all tiers except for majors. You can do it in A tier, a B tier, or a C tier. Now, by the way, you hear us talking about ratings. And if you're listening right now and you're newer to the sport, you're not quite sure what that means. A rating is just a way of describing how advanced you are as a disc golfer, and the higher number your rating is, the more advanced you are. And if you become a really advanced amateur, then your rating might be the same as that of a pro. But again, the rating number doesn't really matter in terms of pro or amateur, because it's whether or not you've accepted cash is as prize money.
Right. And like a lot of people are like, oh, but you can accept some cash. Like if, as long as you stay under that $3,000 mark, you're still considered AM. That's like 100% false, folks. This is not the old NCAA. Like there's not a number. It's zero or one.
And, I've heard a lot of different rumors out there, and the number is always different. Oh, you can accept up to this much. Oh no, you can accept up to that much. No, you can't accept any prize money unless you are a professional or willing to become one.
Right. And we also got a little help from Mike Sullivan. He's also on the event support team there at the PDGA. And he is going to help you guys, if you're listening, on how, if maybe there's an injury or something and you want to reclassify yourself, maybe you took 5 years off and you're coming back and you're not a pro anymore. How can I reclassify myself? So you must not have accepted cash in a pro division in at least the past year.
Okay, that's step number one.
Step number one. The second step is you must not have previously reclassified from the professional to an amateur division or level in the past 5 years. So you can't just keep reclassifying yourself.
No bouncing up and down.
Every 5 years. And then the third thing is you must meet a ratings cap requirement based on your age.
That's right.
So those three things might help if you feel like maybe you're not pro anymore.
Yep. A lot of that information available to you, by the way, on the FAQ page at pdga.com. So if you're wondering what your rating needs to be in order to reclassify based on your age, all of that information is right there for you, and you can start the process very easily. All right, well, before we get out of here this week on PDGA Radio, we can't let Sarah Hokum go without playing a quick round of quick cues. Sarah, this is a lightning round where we're going to ask you a handful of questions just to let our listeners get to know you a little bit better. So normally I say something like, are you ready? But the honest truth is I don't really care if you're ready or not. So question. Question number one. If you weren't a pro disc golfer, what do you think you would be?
Man, I'd probably still be teaching. I'd probably have worked my way to the administration by then.
So like we're talking Principal Hokum?
Probably.
Superintendent Hokum?
Maybe.
Warden?
I don't know. Maybe Athletic Director Hokum?
Maybe a warden?
I could so see that.
I have to be corrupt to be in that situation.
To be a warden? So
that's out.
No, everyone else has to be corrupt. You're the warden. You're the one that takes care of everybody.
Oh, right?
Yeah, you keep all them in line.
I'm going to pass. That sounds way too much like the high school I taught at.
How about a secret or not so secret talent?
I make a really good goat noise.
Okay.
Can we get a video? I mean, wow. I don't know our listeners at home really got the full experience that I just got.
Were you just holding your mouth with your hands in a certain position so that you could make that?
That was a whole other level.
Yeah, I had to go two-handed for that.
That is absolutely spectacular. I really wish I hadn't asked that question. We have got to find a way to move on, so we're just going to. Sarah, you're on the road a lot. What are some of your favorite movies to take on the road?
I don't know if anybody takes movies on the road anymore.
I know. It's figurative, but you know what I mean.
Well, I like to download movies from McDonald's Wi-Fi.
There you go.
That's an option.
So let's pretend you could only take a few with you on the road for this entire season. What movies would you take?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I'd probably take a few of the like the Bad Boys, and then what's that one in the Vegas?
I'm so bad with
God, movies. I know, right? The Hangover movies.
Oh yeah, the second
one. Yeah, I probably have some Bond movies in there. Mostly there's so much to watch that's new. I don't really watch old movies anymore.
Yeah, thankfully we don't have to limit ourselves. But thanks for playing the game with me. You did a really great job of illustrating my creativity there. Who plays you in the Hollywood movie about Sarah Hokum?
God, I would hope maybe Sandra Bullock or something.
Ooh.
That's an interesting answer. I didn't expect that. I like that.
I was thinking someone taller. I picture her as short.
I see her as tall.
Okay.
In Miss Congeniality, maybe it's the heels.
There's the heels.
Maybe it's the heels. What's your favorite meal on the road, Sarah?
Something tasty I didn't have to cook for myself.
Of course.
No, I would say I like either steak or salmon with some asparagus and some rice. That's kind of my go-to.
Okay, and a great follow-up question to that has materialized so far this year. When it comes to that favorite meal, are you the kind of player that wants to eat it the night before a big tournament because it gets you in kind of a happy frame of mind? Or do you like to eat it at the end of the tournament because it's motivation or a reward?
Let's see. I try not to attach so much emotion to food.
Okay.
that gets dangerous for me. So I try to eat. I like to eat it before the tournament as a way to fuel my body.
All right.
Because it's typically pretty nutritious.
It's typically pretty nutritious. A steak or a little salmon, some protein launches you into that tournament. Well, Sarah, we hope you launch into lots and lots of great tournaments this year. So here's hoping you find lots of good steak and lots of good salmon before those events start. We're going to be watching you this year and rooting you on.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It was fun. And I can't wait to listen to some more of your stuff.
All right, Jen, it's time to say goodbye. We've got to get out of here. We've had Sarah in for a long, long time. So PDGA Radio out. We're 1 month in 2022 down. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. See everybody next week.